Good morning. Boker Tov. Chanukah Sameach to everybody. I hope everyone's battening down the hatches for the coming storm. And yes, Hashem, we should get some rain. Yes, hopefully. So we started last week on a topic which I think is very important, and we'll see soon that I'm not the only person that thinks that. We looked a little bit last week at Hanukkah issues and the Greeks, and we talked about the slightly, if you like, anachronistic relationship that we have, not anachronistic, but a hot and cold way that we view the Greeks. That we, on the one hand, see them as an enemy, and Antiochus was there to make zeros on the Jewish people. We said that in Alanisim. On the other hand, we have this love relationship with the Greeks as well as the hate relationship with the Greeks, and we talked about that. We brought from Tzedekah Kohen about the Noga Batsaviv, the light around the Greeks, and the image of the cloud from Yechezkel with a backlit by the sun, that there's something behind it which we're really focused on and positive about, even though the thing itself is dark. I'm not going to go over that again. There's lots of wonderful Torah. Oh, I think there's an announcement coming up here. Okay, let me, before I get too excited about the shiur, let me make the announcement. Right, thank you very much. I'd like to make an announcement. Stop press. Come celebrate Hanukkah with a story of modern-day miracles recognizing Hashem's hand in our own lives. Rav Chanoch Teller, not to be missed, is coming to speak this evening at 8 p.m. If you're interested in doing that, that will be 8 p.m. tonight at the OU Israel Center, Rav Chanoch Teller. Thank you for that announcement. Fine. So last week we spoke about the Greeks, and then we began the discussion about Chochmas Yevanis, Greek wisdom. And should we or should we not integrate Greek wisdom, i.e. today's secular studies, into our Jewish Torah lives? And we need to take that conversation forward. And let me tell you how I want to do that, Mi'as Hashem. I'm here today, next week I'm not going to be here, but 2 weeks from now I'd like to do a part three on this and finish this off, and I'll explain how I'd like to do it. There are a number of important modern voices on the issue of Torah and secular studies that we need to examine in more depth. I'd say that after today's show, where we're going to look at Rav Hirsch, who I don't know if you can really call Rav Hirsch a modern voice anymore. Rav Hirsch is already 150 years ago. But there are three 20th century thinkers that we need to look at seriously. One of them I'm not going to go into because I talked about this some time ago, which is Rabbi Norman Lam on the subject of Torah or Mada. He wrote a very important book on Torah or Mada. What I'd like to do maybe is we'll give a double bill next week or 2 weeks from now. I'll bring you the source sheet. I'll get copied the source sheet that we made about Rabbi Lam's analysis, and then I can give you that. You can read it and send me an email if you have any questions. But two other people that we never looked at before are Rav Shimon Schwab, who asked this question to some of the Gedolei Torah in the 20th century, Rav Chanan Wasserman and the Chofetz Chaim and Rav Baruch Ben Leibovitz and others. What is the appropriate Torah approach to Torah together with Derech Eretz, secular studies, etc.? I'd like to analyze Rav Shimon Schwab and much more up-to-date Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein had an enormous amount to say about this topic. He himself was not only one of the Gaoni Olam in terms of the Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva up until a few years ago when he passed away. He also had a PhD from Harvard in English literature and had a broader sweep of understanding of the world of secular learning than almost anybody who has the same level of understanding of Torah that he had. So I'd like to look at what he says as well. So just in terms of next time, what we're going to be doing is looking at Rav Shimon Schwab, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and then we'll put this topic aside and we'll move into other more halachic issues. There's all sorts of interesting halachic contemporary issues that I'd like to get into. Okay, so that's, if you like, by way of a trailer as to what's going to be coming, a spoiler alert, so what's going to be in a couple of weeks from now. Yes, Hashem. For now, let's actually start the shiur with Rav Aaron. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who I'm sure many people in this room knew personally. If I could just make an announcement about mobile phones. I don't know if that's a little tinkle from somewhere. If you could please turn down your mobile phones onto silent. Let's have a look what Rav Aaron says in number one. Few matters concern us, both disturb and affect us more than the relationship between our religion and secular studies. As students committed to Torah and the study of Torah, and yet deeply engaged in the pursuit of a general education, which I think speaks for probably most people, not everybody in this room, we feel, and should feel, a strong need to understand the respective positions of the two areas in our lives. The need is related to both our outlook and our experience. Philosophically, we recognize the necessity to determine how these varied aspects of our pluralistic culture coalesce. How do they come together? Within our overall Weltanschauung. How does Torah and secular study come together in terms of our worldview? Practically, we are often confronted with the need to reconcile the demands that these aspects make upon our loyalties and our energies. How much time do we put into them? The formulation of a Torah attitude towards this question thus takes on paramount importance. And he also says later in that article, the problems arising from the integration of Torah and secular studies are still pressing. We would be committing the gravest folly were we to regard this controversy, as I'm afraid many of us do, as a remotely irrelevant issue. Almost as a historical curiosity. A question Gedolei Israel could discuss with such fervent interest cannot be likely dismissed. We're not in a situation where we can just dismiss this topic. We need to get into it in much more detail. And therefore, what I'd like to bring you today is an overview of the question of Torah in Derech Eretz. Torah in Derech Eretz, as I'm sure you are aware, was popularized by Rav Shimcha Rafael Hirsch, in the mid-19th century, in the 1840s, 50s, 60s. He wrote a number of seminal works. His first work he wrote was Choreb, which is a masterful work and a must-read, I think, for anybody interested in understanding of what mitzvahs are and mean and say to us in the modern world, i.e. the post-Enlightenment world. Choreb is phenomenal. It's a big work. They wouldn't publish it at first because they didn't know if it would sell. So they said, why don't you write a trailer for Choreb and see if anybody's interested in this kind of thing. So after he wrote Choreb, he wrote the 19 letters. And he published that, which is a much smaller and cheaper to publish work. And it was a sellout immediately. So they said, okay, good, we'll print Choreb, and we think people will want to read it. And they did read it. And of course, he went on to write many other things, which you can find in his commentary on the Chumash and collected writings. And we'll see Rav Hirsch coming up in a few minutes. Where did this idea of Torah in Derech Eretz come from? Two Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos. Let's look in 3 and 4. Rabbi Gamliel b'nai shor Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Omer, Yafa Yafa Talmud Torah im Derech Eretz. How beautiful Yafa, which is very interesting because there's a, you know, Yafa Lekim v'Yafa, there's a Greek angle to the word Yafa as well. How beautiful is Talmud Torah together with Derech Eretz? Now, what does Derech Eretz mean? The way of the world. He'll define it in a minute. Sheyit shnei emashkachas avon, because if you can achieve both, you will drive away any kind of averas, or certain kinds of averas. Why? The Kol Torah, I think this verse, because of any Torah which she'ein ima malacha, which doesn't have work with it, suffer b'teilu b'goreis avon. In the end, the Torah will be lost, and will cause sin. You'll end up doing averas. If you don't have meaningful employment together with your Torah learning, you'll end up losing the Torah learning as well.
Some people say ima meaning his wife.
His wife is going to be the one with a malacha. Yeah, I'm not sure that's Shaina Mishnah, but that's nice. Okay? So to number 4. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah Omer, im ein Torah, ein derech eretz, v'im ein derech eretz, ein Torah. And Rav Hirsch will get into that soon. We're used to hearing im ein kemach, ein Torah. Of course, that's another fundamental. But if there's no derech eretz, you'll lose the Torah as well. On the same level, if there's no Torah, what is the derech eretz for? We'll have to define derech eretz properly. Okay, so it sounds from the Mishnah that Chazal wanted us to have a combination, Torah together with Derech Eretz, because without the combination, life will deteriorate. And indeed, the Gemara in Kiddushin, the Mishnah and the Gemara in Kiddushin talk about the obligations of a father to their children, to his children, specifically to his son. It says in number 5, the Tan Rabbanan, Ha'av chayi b'b'nai l'moilai, your father has to arrange a bris milah for his son, l'sdoisai, pidyon haben, if the son needs a pidyon haben, l'lamda Torah, he has to teach him Torah, l'asiyo isha, has to find him a shidduch, u'l'lamda umnus, and has to teach him a trade, so he can earn money. Yesh amrim af l'ashit b'mai. Also maybe to teach him to swim, with safety in life generally. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer and Rabbi Yehuda adds, Kol she'einu melamed es b'noi umnus, if you don't teach your son how to earn a meaningful living, melamda listus, you're teaching them to steal. Says the Torah, says the Gemara, listus, really? You're teaching your son to steal? No, Ella Keilu Malanda Tislas. It's as Listus. That's Freudian slip there because it's very similar to the Keilu Malanda Tislas of the girl in Torah. Keilu Malanda Listus. It's as if you taught them to steal. It's not that you actually taught them to steal, but if they don't have money, they'll end up on the black market. They'll end up cutting corners on their tax returns, on their claims, and all of that kind of stuff, and they'll end up stealing because they don't have enough money to live an honest life. On the other hand, the Gemara in Kiddushin, at the end of Kiddushin, seems to give an alternative approach. Tanya, number 6, very end of Kiddushin. Rabbi Nohorai Omer, Rabbi Nohorai says, Maniach ani kol umna sheba oilam, I am going to leave all other trades to one side, the eini melamed et bni ela toira. I'm only going to send my son to yeshiva. No trade, no other kind of studies to earn money, just yeshiva. Because every other trade, if you want to teach your kid to be a carpenter or a lawyer or a doctor, whatever it is, while they're young and fit and able, they can do that. But when they're old, they'll be starving because they won't be able to work. Who knows, their pensions might not come through, the stock market might crash, all the planning that they did, and they can't work, they can't use their hands, they're too old, their head's no longer together, they can't practice. So what are they going to do with that? It's only going to help them for part of their life. Aval Torah ain't okay. When, if they know Torah properly, that's not going to happen to them. It'll be good when they're young. And it'll give them hope when they're old as well. They won't lose their Torah. They can always lose their Torah. How's it going to help them? They're not going to starve. But they'll teach Torah. People will respect them. People will give them, a stipend. People will want them to give shiurim in the OU Israel Center or somewhere like that. Don't worry, if you can teach a Torah, then you'll never go wrong. So the question the Mephoshim asked was, well, how could he say that? How can Rabbi Nohorai say that? Didn't the Braita say very clearly, the obligation of a father is to teach his son a trade? How can he reject that and say, I only want to teach my son Torah? He's also in the Mishnah, by the way. That's the whole thing is part of the Mishnah. So the answer to that really comes in number 7, which is a clear statement of the two positions, Torah only and Torah im Derech Eretz, which reverberate through to this very day. So let's have a look at this this Machlokes in Brachos number 7. It starts off with an apparently innocuous phrase. In the Shema, we say every day, Va'asafta t'ganecha. Gather in your corn, gather in your grain. So the Torah says, Matal Medloma, what's the Torah telling me? I need to know to gather in my grain. If I already planted it and watered it, I'm going to leave it in the fields. The Torah has to tell me, oh, don't forget, bring it in when it's time for harvest. Why does it say that? Lefisha Nema, because it says, Lo Yamush Sefer Torah Azemi Picha. This Sefer Torah may never leave your mouth. V'yita bo yomam v'alayla, that's the end of the passage. You have to learn Torah all day, all night. Yochel Dvarim Tkasvam, you might have thought this was literal. I mamash have to learn Torah all day and all night. I can't get a job. Talmud Lomer says the Torah, no, va'asachta diganecha. You're allowed, maybe even obligated, to take a break from your learning, to bring in your corn, to bring in your grain. Hanheg behem minhag derech eretz. This is Rabbi Yishmael, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael, who brings this idea from, we saw in Pirkei Avos. You should learn Torah, very much. But you must have minhag derech eretz with it. You must also have a job. You must also have money. You have to take time off. You're allowed to take time off from your learning in order to bring in your grain. Rav Shimon bar Yochai, Omer, Rav Shimon ben Yochai says, one second, Efsha adam chayrish b'shav charisha, zarei b'shav zriya, kaitse b'shav ketira, dash b'shav tisha, zayre b'shav zayre. Really? Do you know how long it takes to earn a living? You're going to plow when it needs plowing time, and sow with sowing time, and winnow with winnowing time, and thresh at threshing time. You're going to be working 15 hours a day. You want to be a lawyer on Wall Street? You think that's a nice idea? You want to be a doctor on 64-hour shifts or whatever? Are you serious? Torah Mateyala. You never learn anything. It's nice in theory. But in practice, you're going to be working your whole life. Ella, what does Vasata Dibanecha mean? Bisman Shiyisrael Oysen Ritzana Shel Mokum. When the Jews do what they're meant to do in this world, Melachtam Nasis Ha'ideh Cherim. Other people will earn money for them. We'll get a check. We'll get a stipend check from someone else. Shinema, v'amdu zarim v'ra'u t'aneichem. The Potekin Yeshayahu. Others, zarim, foreign workers will come and work our fields okay? And we'll get the money. When we're not behaving the way we're meant to in this world, never will have to do our own work. It's not a heter or a mitzvah even for Torah in Derech Eretz. It's almost like a klala, it's almost like a curse. But you'll have to do your own work. No one's going to be sending you checks. Not only that, will even be forced to do other people's work. You'll have to serve your enemies. Okay, two worldviews. Rabbi Shmuel's worldview seems to come from the Mishnah, Torah in Derech Eretz, gather in your grain, take time off, have a trade, and presumably learn how to have a trade. Here, he's not talking about learning for the sake of broadening your mind. Anything you need in order to earn a living, study whatever, you're allowed to ask after Diganecha. Says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Chas v'Shalom, if you do that, you'll never end up learning anything. Who's the halacha like? So again, the Gemara answers in a very interesting way. Amar Abaya says, Harbi Asukah Rabbi Shmuel, many people did what Rabbi Shmuel said and combined Torah and work, and it worked out well for them. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, when they tried to do what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is and sit in Kolel all day, it didn't work out for them. Okay, so who's right and who's wrong? Do we follow Rabbi Shmuel and get a job? Or do we follow Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and sit in Kolel? So what did the Gemara answer? It didn't really answer. It said, well, many people tried Rabbi Shmuel, it worked out. But when the many tried Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, then it didn't work out for them. So what the Meforshim get out of that, what the Pesukim get out of that, is that there's two approaches. There's for the many and for the few. For the majority of people, they have to get a job. They have to be earning money. They have to be supporting their families and other people's families when necessary. That's the stack for the many. And that's what the Shulchan Aruch passes. The Shulchan Aruch is written for the many, not the few. Look at number 8. After the Shulchan Aruch brings all the halachas of davening, you daven, you have a bit of breakfast, he says, then go to work. There's a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, get on your bike and go to work, to quote Norman Tebbit from the 1980s. But that's not relevant. Because if you don't have a job with your Torah, faith for Bateila, you'll end up losing everything for Goreis Abba. Very clear, passages like the Rabbi Shmuel, passages like Pirkei Avos, you have to get a job. Says the Rambam. Rambam also passages like that. Ketzad, how do you combine a work, Torah, combined environment? Hayabal umnes, you get a trade. Bahayaisik, b'malach, b'shalash, shalash, and you work 3 hours a day. B'yom, ubetayra, tesha, and you learn 9 hours a day. Work 3 hours, learn 9 hours. That's what a healthy work Torah balance is. That's nice. And by the way, there are jobs that you can do that work. If you want to be a Wall Street lawyer, then good luck to you with that combination. That ain't going to work out. Or a doctor. Or an actuary. But if you want to work shtickle in diamonds, and you have a property portfolio, and all that kind of stuff, I don't know. You can work 2 or 3 hours a day, do a bit of business, and sit and learn for 9 hours a day. If you're lucky enough to do that, it can work out. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't give you a combination of time in that way. He says, number 10, Mikol Makom Lo Yaseh Melachto Ikar, don't make your work the main thing. Ela Arai, make that the temporary thing. V'toirat HaKeva, make your Torah the main fixed thing. V'zeh v'zeh Yitkai B'yada. Meaning he says, I accept that not everyone can work 3 hours and learn 9 hours. Maybe you have to work 10 hours and learn 1 hour. But whatever that learning time is, make that Keva. Make that the thing you look forward to, the fixed point of your day. If you work all day, but the thing that is the highlight of your day is your Daf Yomi Shir in the evening, that's beautiful. If you learn all day, but the highlight of your day is schmoozing with your friends in the bank, then that's not good. Your Torah should be Keva, and the rest should be Arai. And if you can work 3 hours a day and learn 9 hours, then Tov Mot. Very nice. That's the halacha. Like for the many. However, the Rambam, the same Rambam that elsewhere says somebody who doesn't accept the responsibility to earn a living and throws his livelihood on the community to expect them to support him, that's a terrible thing. The same Rambam says at the end of Hilchos Shmita V'Yovel, number 11, the following. But like Shevet Levi do that. It's not just Shevet Levi who we give our Trumas and Maestras to. Ela kol ish ve'ish, mikol bay olam, any human being in the world, Asher nadvar ruchah, that they're driven by their spirit, and his mind and his general approach drives them to separate off, and they want to spend their whole life serving Hashem and learning and understanding Hashem. The halach yasher kemoshe aso elokim uparak mi'atzavara ol cheshbonus, and he throws off his neck the responsibility of cheshbonus. Cheshbonus is making the books balance at the end of the month, and he says, that's not for me. I don't need all that. I don't believe in money, okay? Cheshbonus harabim. Or I do, but I'm not going to go out and earn it because I want to sit and learn. Bikshu b'nei Adam, the Cheshbonus harabim, bikshu b'nei Adam, all these different things that people do in their life, and this person throws them off. Hare ze nitkadesh kodesh kedoshim. Oh, this person is kodesh kedoshim. This is the holy of holies. This is the most special thing a person could do. But yeah, Hashem shall go, don't worry. Hashem will be his portion in life, and achalas la'olam la'olmi olami forever and ever. But yes, kalav olam azeh davar matziklo. He'll make do in this world. He'll make it work. He has to just have bitachon. He'll make it work. Just like the Kohanim and the Levim, they made it work. They didn't have fields, they didn't have investments in the same way that the Jewish people did. Hari David Omer, Hashem anet chelki v'kosiyata, tomich goreli. You support me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will provide. And that's not just a father-in-law joke either, okay? HaKadosh Baruch Hu will provide. Now, what do we think of people who do this, says Rambam, Kodesh Kedoshim. And what you have here clearly is a twin halacha. There's the many and there's the few. For the many, get a job. For the few, sit and learn. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael. And that's what the Gemara said. It didn't want to pass from one way or the other, because for these people this is right, and for those people this is right. The question, of course, is how few is the few, and who is in the few? If you think about it in terms of Shevet Levi, what proportion of the Jewish people were Shevet Levi? It was, maybe it's a small shevet, so let's say it's even less than a 12th. Let's say it's even a 20th, which is on the small side. So if there are 15 million Jewish people today, okay, and 5% of those people should be in full-time learning, like Shevet Levi, that's still an awful lot of people, okay? A great deal more people than actually are today, by any calculation, in full-time learning. So if you turn around and say, oh, there's too many people learning today, the answer is not at all. There's far too few people in full-time learning today. When we get to Shevet Levi proportions, then we can talk about maybe it's too many. The question is not how many, it's which people. Are there people sitting in Kollel who should really be on Wall Street? And are there people working on Wall Street who should really be sitting in Kollel? And are some people given no choices because they're forced to go to college and get a job, and they don't really have a choice to sit and learn? And are other people given no choices the other way? They're forced to go into Kollel and they can't go to college. Okay, that's a good sociological analysis, which you don't need me to get into. You have your own views on that. But in terms of the halacha, it's very clear there should be two groups, a larger group and a smaller group. Yeah.
Didn't
Shevet
Levi work? They had their cities with fields around
them. But they were machanchim. You know, what do machanchim get paid in Ganton? So, you know, you can't rely on a salary as a... You know, people used to ask me when I had five jobs working in different seminaries. They said, why do you have five jobs? So I said, because I didn't find a sixth job yet. That's the answer. and so they did work, but they didn't have, like, the field that they needed in order to make money. And the Mishnah Berurah paskens that on the Shulchan Aruch, where the Shulchan Aruch says, get a job, go to work, says the Shulchan Aruch number 12, Kasva Asvarim, Shizem Namila Klal Ha'olam, this is only for the majority, the main group of people. Shein Kulam Yecholim Lezakos La'alois LeMadrega Rama Zob, they can't reach that Madrega, Liyod Askam Ragba Torah, to be learning Torah full time. Levada, only that. Aval Anashim Yechidim, individuals. And that's what it says. When the many try to sit and learn full time, it doesn't work. Rav Salomon says the Mishnah Berurah. What does that mean? That's when the many try to do that. And specifically, if you can find people that want to support you and fund you and what you need in life, so that you can learn Torah, and you should certainly not be getting a job. Why would you get a job if you didn't need a job? If you're capable of learning and you're able to do that and you're happy to do that, Why would you have a job? Yisachar Zvulun Yochiach. And Yisachar Zvulun proved this. You can make an arrangement. He'll work and support me. I'll learn and give my learning merit to some degree to him. By the way, it's a real deal, Yisachar Zvulun. When I was a lawyer back in the other day when the boot was on the other foot, and people used to come to me and say to me, you know, Yisachar Zvulun, you know, if you earn money, you'll give it to me, and I'll give my Torah to you. I used to say to them, and what if I make a loss this year? Are you going to carry that as well? Because, I mean, it's a proper contractual arrangement. You know, on the good years, that's fine. On the bad years, what about that? But it is a contractual arrangement. But Yisachar Zvulun proves you can make this arrangement. And the Nefesh HaChaim, if you just go over to page 3, in number 13, says, it's not even an option. So the Nefesh HaChaim, aval yachid la'atma she'esh lo'liyot, ach asuk kol yama v'teros v'avadosali. If a person is able to spend their life in full-time learning, v'adai she'chova mutelet alav. He doesn't have an option not to. It's an obligation. So God forbid he should be earning a parnasa where he could be sitting and learning Torah. Now, of course, the Nefesh HaChaim is coming out of the world of Torah Lishma, the Vilna Gaon and the Yeshiva movement, etc. But this is fairly uncontroversial in the sense that the halacha presents two approaches. One is a Torah Derech Eretz for the majority, and the other is a Torah only for the few. And we'll see, Rav Shimon Schwab says, well, therefore why is everyone shouting at each other? Why can't they live together with that model? And this group does this, and this group does that. Yes?
You slid over the fact that the Rambam is referring to Goyim also.
I didn't slide over the fact. I meant to make a point of this. Call boy on and anyone in the world.
What are they supposed to learn?
There's lots to learn. Maybe they should be learning Chacham Shivanis. Maybe they should be learning Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. There's an awful lot of things for a non-Jew to learn. Maybe they should be learning Torah. I'm going to say, but if you a non-Jew learns Torah, but there's different views on that. Non-Jew who learns Torah is like Cain Gadol, you know, how does that work? So don't worry, there's plenty for them to learn. Maybe we should be prioritizing yeshivas for Jews before we set up yeshivas for non-Jews. By the way, that was one of the issues. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, had an enormous impact, obviously, on his Talmidim. An incredible impact. But one of the issues that they really didn't follow him on, and they broke up, was this idea of setting up academies to study the Sheva Mitzvahs and Enoch. To go out and proselytize to the Jews to be Noahites. That doesn't really do it for most people. Although there are, to the non-Jews, excuse me. Although there are people in America who did live as Noahites. In England, I haven't met many. Any. Okay? Yes. Okay, so it's not talking about the women working, it's talking about the husbands working. If you have an arrangement within your family that one of you works and one of you sits and learns, then I assume that the better way to do that is that the woman works and the husband learns. But maybe it depends on the value of the learning. If the woman's learning is better quality, maybe he should work and she should learn. But of course he has a different mitzvah to learn. He has the mitzvah of a Yita Yomam V'Laila, which she doesn't have. Even though women are obligated in Talmud Torah, and we had that share, we talked about this, there are four mitzvahs in the Chumash to talk about Talmud Torah. At least two, probably three of them women are fully obligated in. It's just in one of them that men are more obligated. But nevertheless, the Gita Bo Yom HaLaila is a men's mitzvah. Yeah. Good question. I just said, not me, that's for sure. Society decides, and we need to work on getting that balance right. Okay, society is organic. It moves over time. In mass movements, and we have, but this is the ideal, that we should have a group who are working and a group who are learning full time. Yeah.
You said the Rambam says that the daily work balance should be 3 hours of work a night.
If you can, yes.
But that's only 4 hours.
We've got to eat. You've got to do other stuff. You've got to sleep. He wants you to sleep 8 hours a day, apart from anything else, even though the Rambam probably never got 8 hours sleep in his entire life. But there are other things that you've got to do as well as that. It's not just working and learning. You could commute. Yeah, the Rambam talks about his daily commute through Cairo on a donkey. And he didn't have a USB to plug into the donkey to learn the daf on the way there and back. So the rest of the day is the other stuff that you need to do. I assume that is what he's saying. Okay? Now, look at number 14. Let's go on, because this is all very straightforward in terms of Torah and Malacha. And it's fairly uncontroversial. You had a question, sir?
Learning and one working, then is there any obligation on the small group to spend part of that time teaching?
Good. Good. And Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on this when he talks about that if you can give tzedakah in money, you should give tzedakah in time, and part of that time should be teaching and learning Torah with people, etc. And Shevet Levi, the gentleman over there, said, didn't just sit and learn, they also taught. They were part of the 100%. 100%. Absolutely. Yeah, look, I'm not making social comments on how now works, but that certainly would be definitely part of the whole cheshbon. Look at number 14. Number 14 is partly we saw last week, but I'd like to expand it. When we go beyond just the question of working, and maybe studying in order to get a job, because working doesn't just mean going out to work, it means studying in order to get that job. What about going beyond that to the world of secular learning generally for the sake of secular learning? So we saw part of this, but I'd like to expand this to number 14 to see the context now. Look at number 14. Tanya, Rabbi Yosef Oimetz, Gemara Menachos. Afilu silik et hayashana shachris, v'sider et hachadasha arvis, ein bekach klum. What are we talking about? Lechem hapanim. It says the lechem hapanim, the bread on the shulchan, has to be there tamid, constantly. So says Rabbi Yosef here, even if I take the old one off in the morning, and I put the new one in the evening, and therefore it's not there the whole time, it's just there overnight, that's fine. There's no problem with that. Elamani makayim lefanai tamid. How do I satisfy this obligation of tamid? It has to be always there. Shelo yalin shulchan b'lo lechem. That there shouldn't be a night where it goes without bread. But tamid doesn't mean literally always. Tamid means, or constantly. It means consistently. There should never be a night without lechem on the shulchan. Amar Rabbi Ami, mitvara, from here you can learn, shall Rabbi Yossi nilmod. Afil lo shana adam ela perik echad shachris, for perik echad arvis, even if you only learnt a little bit in the morning and a little bit in the evening, ki mitzvah lo yimush sefer Torah hazani picha. It says you must never let the Torah out of your mouth. So we saw with the korban, with the lechem upon him, it doesn't have to be constantly in your mouth. It has to be there in the morning, in the evening. There should never be a day or a night without Torah. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and that's why Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, "Afilu loikara adam ela kriyas shema shachas v'arvis kiim lo yamush." Even if you only said Shema in the morning and Shema in the evening, that's the minimal obligation of Torah. V'davar ze osu la'omru b'tnei ama aris, but don't you dare tell that to the Amoratsim. We don't want them to hear that. That if you just learn a bit in the morning and a bit in the evening, that's already a kiyum of that. Rava, Amar Rava says, no, mitzvah la'omru b'tnei ama aris. And this already is a machlokas in how you deal with the masses. It's good to tell the Amoratsim that, because then they'll be more excited. They can also learn Torah. They'll be inspired to learn in the morning, in the evening. They'll learn more, not learn less. I'm not getting into that. And then we see what we saw last week. Shal ben Dama achayse shal Rabbi Yishmael. Ben Dama, the nephew Rabbi Yishmael, said, asked Rabbi Yishmael, kegoin anish shalamati kola Torah kula. I learned the whole Torah. I'm done with that. Mo lilmod chochmas yivanis. Can I now learn Greek wisdom? Not to get a job. He doesn't want a job. It's not malacha. It's he wants to learn Greek wisdom. Kara alava mikraze, he read to him this pasuk, lo yamush sefer Torah hazeh mipicha v'kita bo yomam v'layla, this sefer Torah must never leave your mouth day and night. Tzehu baduk sha'a she'ein lo min hayom v'lo min halayla v'lo moed v'chach mesivanet, and we talked about this last week. Find a time which is neither day nor night. And then you can learn chach mesivanet. And what did we say last week? It was the kind of main hashmoshes of life, which we'll get into a little bit more with Rav Hirsch. Upligen Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, we never saw this last time. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni disagrees with this whole thing. We're assuming that the pasuk, the Yigita bo yamam v'layla, is an obligation. Men have to be learning all day. The Amar of Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Amar of Yochanan, pasuk ze'eino l'chof v'lo mitzvah. This is not an obligation, this pasuk in Yeshua. Ela brocha. You're reading it wrong, he says. This is a brocha to Yeshua. God sees, he likes learning. Oh, I'll give you a brocha, you'll always be able to learn. Baruch Hashem. But it's not an obligation. So maybe there is no halachic obligation, according to this view, to learn all day and all night. Is it too warm in here? Okay, I'm just seeing. Some people are wilting and some people are freezing. Okay, fine. So I'll leave it that on balance we're perfect. Okay? So when we see next week, practically speaking, is a man allowed, what is a man allowed to do? leave aside women for now in this whole discussion. Okay? What is a man? Is a man allowed to do anything but learn Torah? Are you allowed to check the news? Are you allowed to, watch a movie? Are you allowed to... What about any of these other things in life? How does that balance work? We have to ask. We'll see Rav Aaron Lichtenstein ask this question. Do you really have an obligation to learn Torah literally all day and all night unless there's something essential that you need to do with that time? And we'll see. This already is part of the discussion about that. Fine. Let us move into the halacha, and then we'll see Rav Hirsch, which will take us very beautifully into the discussion about Torah Derech Eretz, which I want to have for the rest of this year. So how does the Shulchan Aruch bring all of this? In conclusion, he says, let's open the window a bit. Someone said, open the window a bit, correct? Well, of course, the person sitting next to the window will be cold, but what can we do? There we are. A little bit of air will be good. Look at number 15. 15 and 16, let's look at the Shulchan Aruch. Says the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, Kol Ish Yisrael Chayav B'Talmud Torah. Every Jewish male is obligated to learn Torah. Afilu Bal Isho Banim, even if he's married with obligations, wife, children, Chayav Likvolot Man, he has to at least set aside a time, B'Talmud Torah, B'Talmud Torah, B'Yom U'Balayla. And this is halacha. I say to my students, you can marry a Wall Street banker, that's a wonderful thing, but he has to learn a little bit during the day, a little bit during the night, it has to be kavua. That's an obligation on a Jewish man. Ubeshatatchak, says the Ramad, brings Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, afilu loy kara rak kriyas shma shachris arvis, loy yamush mipicha karina bay. That's enough. If he only reads the Shema, and he learns it properly in the morning and the evening, that'll do minimally. V'yachal ha'adam lahatnois im chaverun, you can make a deal with your friend, shehu yatzor b'tara, he should learn Torah, v'hu yamtzi loy parnasa, and the other guy will give him money, v'yachal ha'kimo haskar. V'yachal zvulun, you can do such a thing, and people, by the way, draw contracts. It's not just a nice shtick that people say when they're collecting on the doorstep. People, mamash, draw up deals and contracts. You can probably get one offline, v'yachal zvulun, online contract, etc. Fine. That's on the issue of parnasa. Look at number 16. The Ein La'adam Lilu Ki in Mikra Mishnah of a Gemara. We saw this last week, but we'll see a little bit more. What should you be learning? Mikra Chumash Mishnah Gemara Talmud Va'apoyskim Adim Shachim Achreim. And the poiskim that come after them, says Ramah. Which is interesting. Is that included in that Chassidus? Some people have shading. Some people not. Meaning, is that actually quite restrictive? You should be learning Chumash, Gemara, and Meporashim. That's what you should be learning. But let's just assume it means any bona fide Torah inspirationally moving subject as well, although that's not clear. This will give you what you need in Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba, we saw the Gemara in Kiddushin. Don't start learning other things. You shouldn't be learning English literature, science, all of that stuff. And then he says, Mikol Mokom Mutz a little more by Akrai B'Shar Chochmas. We saw this last week. But having just told you you shouldn't learn them, he now says you can learn them, as long as it's by Akrai, incidentally. Well, that should all be a Sifrei Minim, as long as you're not learning something which is apikoresis. And that's going to be a big discussion. We're going to have to flesh this out next time. Which is, where do I draw the line? What's Sifrei Minim? Should I be learning a frumed up version of secular studies that's been approved by the local rabbinic authorities, with all the relevant pages torn out or blacked out or whatever it is? Is that the secular studies that I should be doing? Because otherwise I'm learning apikoresis. Or should I be learning the corpus of secular literature being taught how to filter? We saw Esav and the hug and the kiss at the end of last week. Should I be doing that? And there'll be different approaches to that too, because I'm not allowed to learn apikoresis. Maybe that's depending on the person, depending on the school, depending on the society. But then he adds, "V'zeu nikra ben chachamim." And what do we call learning secular studies? Tiul b'paradis. This is a walk in paradise. Okay, paradise, of course, is the word paradise. That's where the word paradise comes from. But here he's using it in the sense that there's arba nichnasu l'paradis. The Gemara says, by Rabbi Kiva, Ben Zoma, etc., there were four that went into the paradise, this secret place of deep study. Says the Ramah, that's Greek philosophy, secular study, tiul b'paradis. Ve'en la'adam l'tayil b'paradis, rak la'acha shimei l'kreiso basa v'yayim. But don't go walking in the paradise, eating the, like, kinuach, eating the dessert, before you filled your belly with meat and wine. Okay, don't forget to get the main thing. What is meat and wine? For who lay day is the heter, the dine ha-mitzvahs. You have to first know Judaism, then you can go walk in the paradise. And that he brings from the Rambam at the end of Sefer Hamada. You are allowed to learn other things, but first of all you have to be competent. I don't know how, what does it mean to fill your tummy with meat and wine? How much Torah do you have to learn in order to say, okay, now I qualified for a walk in the paradise? And that's not clear either. Do you have to learn till you're 25 Torah only, and then you can go to college and start learning other things? Can we already teach you a joint curriculum of Chol and Kodesh from the age of 10? How does that work? Does it depend what subjects? That's not clear either from here, but it seems that we only encourage people to learn secular studies when they're qualified enough, whatever enough means, in Torah. Is this an obligation to have you see the university where you can be learning in a Torah environment at the same time, filling your tummy with meat and wine at the same time as walking in the paradise? You should know, over the page, please, to page 4, the Vilna Gaon says, immediately quite a famous comment from the Gra, he says, no, that's not the paradise. The paradise is not studying English literature in Harvard. Absolutely not. Says the Vilna Gaon, avaloi ra'u et ha-paradise. He never saw the paradise, Rav Moshe Isserles. Loi who? Veloi ha-Rambam. Neither him nor the Rambam. That's not what the paradise is. If they think that that's what the paradise is, they never went in the paradise. What is the paradise? The Amishel, Adam, the tile, you're right, you shouldn't walk in the paradise until you fill your tummy with meat and wine tomorrow in Chagiga. Ein Moshin Sisrei Torah means you shouldn't be learning Kabbalah until you have a proper grounding in regular Torah. But the paradise is not secular studies, the paradise is learning Kabbalah. Okay, that's very interesting. That doesn't mean, of course, that the Vilna Gaon is not in favor of learning secular studies. That just means that that's not the paradise. The paradise is something else. And indeed, we'll see next week in Yes Hashem that the Vilna Gaon actually instructed his students to do whatever they could to translate certain areas of secular studies, very famously Euclid on geometry, into Hebrew so that the secular studies would be available for those who only spoke Hebrew. So the Ramah, however, thinks that secular studies should be, that is the paradise, and that is should be on the menu. And in fact, in number 18, you'll see a very interesting three lines before we get into Rav Hirsch. The Ramah was held to task. He was quite controversial, by the way, the Ramah. He said a number of very controversial things in his time, had controversial psakim, people wrote letters, nothing's changed. Even though he was the author of the Shulchan Aruch, or became so, it didn't stop other people telling him that he was destroying Torah, Judaism as we know it. Have a look in number 18. He writes a letter very politely to somebody who'd accused him of completely being out of order. He says, by teaching or allowing learning secular studies, says the Ramah, "Tchila ane ma shehirish adoni et ha'olam alai." First of all, I want you to answer the fact that you made the whole world scream at me. Because I quoted secular learning in my book, the Rosh Philosophy, and the head of the philosophers, Aristotle, etc. And you write to me that when I do this, when I quote secular learning, the Torah goes into mourning over this, because I did a terrible thing. I want to tell you, this is a very old debate. This is not just happening in the 16th century. This has been happening forever. I don't even need to even respond on that issue. Just learn the sources and you'll see this is a debate going back as long as you want to go back. For who are Basav Yayin? This is what I mean. The Basav Yayin, Shekasav Rambam, Masefa Hamada, Mehilchus Study HaTorah. Umilanu Gadol Me'arambam. Who is bigger than the Rambam? Sha'asa Sefer HaMoira, he wrote an entire book of Moreh Nevuchim, Shakula Eina Ela Mizeh Hamin. And the whole thing is based on Greek philosophy. And you're telling me you're not allowed to teach Greek philosophy? This is a machlokas. You don't agree with me? Fine, don't agree with me. Accept that it's a machlokas. Elu ve'elu. And when Rav Shimon Schwab, we'll see next time, wrote his treatise on this in the 1960s, he called it Elu ve'elu. Why are you making out that there's only one view here? There are two approaches. There always have been two approaches. And the Ramah says, stop screaming at me and understand that this is a machlokas. You take your view, that's good. I respect that, but you have to respect my view as well, because the Rambam himself, music from heaven. Okay, fine. At least not Christmas carols, that's good. Let's go on to Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch is perhaps the preeminent voice on this issue on Torah im Derech Eretz. And I want to show you you know, how do you bring from the whole corpus of Rav Hirsch two or three sources that deal with this? You really need to read what he writes in full and in detail. You need to read the 19 letters, you need to read Chorev, Peirush on the Chumash. I'm going to bring you just three quotes from Rav Hirsch, and it's criminal to do that, but that's all the time that we have. But these three sources will enlighten us what it means in his view, Torah and Derech Eretz. Now remember, Rav Hirsch is speaking to an educated German audience. He's already 50 years after the rise of the Reform Movement. People are already given access to the universities. The ghetto walls came crumbling down at the end of the 1700s, beginning of the 1800s in Western Europe. He's in Western Europe. And he's speaking to a group of people who are already secularly educated and much less religiously observant. And he's trying to show them that you don't have to choose between your secular German Wissenschaft and your Jewish observance. You can have both. You can have Torah in Derech Eretz, which is an important point that he's making. Have a look first in Vayikra Rabbah number 19. Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, Bar of Nachman, Esrin Veshisha Doiras Kadma Derech Eretz Es HaTorah. 26 generations Derech Eretz came before Torah. Have a Hudichsif, that's why it says, Lishmor Et Derech Eitz HaChaim. What's the Derech Eitz HaChaim? So originally there was a tree, the Eitz HaChaim. But then they ate from the Eitz HaDaas, so they were no longer allowed access to the Eitz HaChaim. But at the end of the story of Bereishis, and there in Bereishis chapter 3, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts the cherub there to guard the Eitz HaChaim, all of a sudden it's turned into a Derech. There's a Derech. There was never a Derech there before. Now there's a path that leads to the Eitz HaChaim. What is this Derech on the way to the Eitz HaChaim? Says the Midrash there, Derech zo Derech Eretz, that is Derech Eretz, v'achakach Eitz HaChaim zo Torah. Now the Chumash is telling us, says the Midrash here, that now there is you can't just go and eat from the Eitz HaChaim anymore. That's not how it works. First you have to go down the path, and then you have to eat from the Eitz HaChaim. And this whole, by the way, imagery of the path and going down the path gives rise to the word halacha, which is the way you go down the path, it's going, and the word minhag, which is from the word nahag, which is the way you drive down the path on the way to the Eitz HaChaim. All of these things connect. So what does Rav Hirsch say here? What is the Derech? What is it, by the way, where did they get 26 generations from? Derech Eretz before Torah. So 10 generations from Adam to Noah, 10 generations from Noah to Abraham, and 6 generations from Abraham to Matan Torah. 26 generations from Matan Torah, then they receive Torah. But first you need 26 generations of Derech Eretz. Says Rav Hirsch, number 20. In Vayikra Rabbah 9, what we just read here, the sages designate the road that leads us to the Tree of Life as Derech Eretz, as the way of culture. Now, here he's not defining Derech Eretz as malacha, as get a job. He's saying 26 generations is not just about get a job. The Torah is talking about something else here, which is something you need before you can learn Torah. He says that's culture. The way of the social refinement which results from people living together in the world as being the first tutor and educator to morals, manners, and order. First you have to be a human being. First you have to be a mensch, then you can be a Jew. But if you're not a mensch, what kind of a Jew are you? One builds on the other. Culture starts the work of educating the generations of mankind, the first 26 generations, and Torah completes it. For Torah is the most finished education of mankind. Now, for us Jews, Derech Eretz and Torah are one. We learn it all together. But in the general development of mankind, culture comes earlier. That is why the Jew rejoices whenever and wherever culture elevates people to a perception of true values and to nurture goodness. We rejoice in that. Now, but of course, where culture and civilization are used in the service of sensuality, the degeneration only gets all the greater. He says, I'm not naive. I know that you can call something culture when actually it's just crass, vulgar, Yetzirah. I know that. Not everything that you put on as art is really art. And of course, that's going to be a very interesting relative value judgment as to what is art and what is beyond art and unacceptable. He says, I know that. Don't think me naive. But still, such misuse of culture does not do away with the intrinsic value and blessing of Derech Eretz for him, ain't Derech Eretz, ain't Torah. Just because some people abuse culture, that doesn't take away the value of culture. You have to have it. Therefore, Jews too are to attach themselves and love all good and true culture by the ways and manner of their behavior and demeanor appear as educated people. Jews have to be educated. I'm sorry. There's nothing to talk about. And show that being a Jew is only a higher state of being a man. And of course, on the other side, in Ein Torah, in Derech Eretz, if culture and education, instead of leading to Torah, take the place of it, then it's not the way that leads to the tree of life, but the way that leads to degeneration. Of course, he's not suggesting that you can live culture alone. In Ein Torah, Ein Derech Eretz. Now, of course, you can turn around and say to Rav Hirsch, would Rav Hirsch still say this, given the 20th century? I mean, you can be very positive about life and optimistic in the 19th century. Does the 20th century delegitimize this? Does the fact that the culture that he so was enamored by, that the fact that that resulted in the Holocaust, does that take away in any way from what he's saying? And Rav Lichtenstein said, absolutely not. That's exactly the point he's making. If you have culture as the sole means of elevating human beings, then it doesn't work. And you end up with a degenerated society that put all its faith in culture and look where it got them. What you need is Torah, him, Derech Eretz. That's the point. The fact that German society led to the 1930s and 40s is not in any way a disproof of Rav Hirsch. On the contrary, it actually is exactly what he's saying. He says that very clearly, and I think that quote from the commentary on Chumash, there in Bereishis, in Derech Eitz HaChaim, says it perhaps very succinctly more than anywhere else, or as much as anywhere else. But I want to bring you another one as well. Have a look in number 21, 22, and 23. Let's go over the page. There's a mitzvah to teach your children Torah. The dibarta bam, talk about Torah. The shifta chava leitecha, the lechta chava derech, the shachbacha, uvkumecha. All the time, on the road, in the house, in the morning, in the evening, whatever you're doing, you should be talking about Torah. Says Chazal number 22. The dibarta bam, what does it mean? Asam ikar, make them Torah the main thing. Al tasam tefila, never make them secondary. Shelo yehei macha umacha elavahem. What should your business be? Your business should be learning Torah. Shelo tarev behem dvarim acherim kaplani. Don't mix them up with other things which are not Torah. Shema toma, maybe a person might say, Lamadati chochmas Yisrael. I learned Torah. Eilech ve'elma chochmas ha'umas. Now I'll go and learn secular things. Tamad loma, no, the Torah says, Lalechet behem. V'loi li patem itocham. You have to go in them, Torah, and never leave Torah. Okay? So, does that support Rav Hirsch? Or does that oppose Rav Hirsch? So you're going to say, well, that's a problem for Rav Hirsch. Says Rav Hirsch, no, that proves exactly what I'm saying. How's he going to do that? Have a look in 23. If we understand these sentences aright, then the sentence which stands at the head makes them the primary and not subsidiary, forewarns one not to take the following sentences to mean that one is completely to ignore and remain in ignorance of all knowledge and science which has been gained or nurtured from non-Jewish sources, or which have no direct bearing on the knowledge to be gained by the study of Torah. I mean, when the source in Chazal says, make Torah the main thing, it assumes that there are other things. That's how a clever parshan deals with something that apparently is a problem. Inasmuch as what is commanded is make them the primary focus, not subsidiary, the permission to occupy oneself also with other spheres of knowledge is assumed. This source assumes that you're going to learn Limudei Chol. Only the knowledge of Torah and the understanding we derive from it is to be our principal concern. And it's to be regarded as having been given to us as the absolute and firmly established Torah. Only as accessory knowledge, insofar as they serve to truly help the study of Torah and are subordinated as the total to the Ikkar, are they to be studied. Rav Hirsch says very clearly, Torah im Derech Eretz doesn't mean two systems side by side. It's a foundation of Derech Eretz and a building of Torah on the top of it. The Torah is preeminent. The Torah is the essential goal. And the foundation is Derech Eretz. Now, when I give you the sheet next week, you'll see if Rabbi Lam agrees that Torah Umada is the same as Torah im Derech Eretz. Or what is that? Or for that matter, Torah the Avoda. When you mix other things together in terms of Bnei Akiva, how does that work? But for Rav Hirsch, it's very clear. Torah is preeminent. And it will only work if Torah is preeminent. The Torah and all its teaching must be the yardstick by which we measure the results obtained by other spheres of learning. And again, what does that mean, by the way? What other areas of learning are helpful in our understanding of Torah? So okay, you'll turn around and say, well, if you don't have basic math skills, then you won't be able to do anything. Okay, good, I give you that. Do you need to learn philosophy in order to understand Torah, philology, etymology, science?
Reading
is pretty basic, I get that, but does reading require you to do a PhD in English literature and language?
No.
Okay, but what if you want to? What if you feel that will deeply enhance my learning? It'll make me appreciate Torah all the more. We'll see Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein addresses that question very directly, and we'll give guidance on that. Only that which is in accordance with the truth of Torah can remain true for us. All that we accept intellectually must always be considered from the point of view of the Torah and must be within the lines of the doctrines that it teaches. Sounds like Rav Hirsch is going to be tearing out a few pages from the textbook, maybe. Okay? So that we do not adulterate the knowledge we draw out of the Torah with ideas which we have developed from other and strange premises. What about evolution? What about biblical criticism? That's, of course, why Berlin and Frankfurt were very different places. Okay, Frankfurt was Frankfurt, that was Rav Hirsch. Berlin was Wissenschaft and university and academics and you know, I used to daven in monks in London, and the Frankfurt people there were very unhappy if you said Berlin, you know? It was like a whole different thing, okay? And it wasn't just a local, you know, color war thing, the reds and the blues. It was very much that Frankfurt was that the Wissenschaft, the science, have to be subjugated to Torah requirements. We are not to consider Torah as being the same as other knowledge, so the Torah is only for us just another branch of any other knowledge. So Rav Hirsch doesn't just say, yeah, fine, go and learn to university, Baruch Hashem, it's good. He doesn't say that. However, let me finish with 24, because 24 is one of the most radical statements you can imagine on this issue. Rav Hirsch down on Dvarim says the following. The sphere for human research is limited. There's a limit to what we can know in secular studies. How is it limited? In time? To after the creation, and in space. Meaning, we are unfortunately limited. All we can study is everything from the beginning of time and from one side of the universe to the other. I'm afraid that limits what we can do. We are denied knowledge of, and it is useless to try and probe to find out what was before creation or what lies beyond the created material world. Basically, it means everything inside that, which is everything, we can do. But to obtain knowledge of nature, history, which is open to our research within these limits, is not only something permitted, but something which is eminently desirable to the fullest possible extent. Now, that's an interesting word. For only a mind armed with such a wide panoramic view on all matters can draw the right conclusions of the Jewish position in the world. Think of what he just said. He just said, if you stand and learn in Kollel all your life, then I don't trust your Torah either. Because you don't have a panoramic vision of the world. You didn't learn science. You didn't learn history. You didn't learn secular studies to the extent that you needed to. Therefore, how can I trust you on Torah? Because your Torah is not broadened and deepened by that understanding of the rest of the world. Now, you can understand why a lot of people will disagree with that. Okay? But that's Rav Hirsch. Very interesting. So on the one hand, he's telling you, you know, Torah has to be primary, Torah has to be, you know, the thing that qualifies all other things. On the other hand, he's telling you, if you did not take the opportunity to learn secular studies to the extent that you should have done and could have done, then your Torah is lacking in some way substantially from that as well. That's very interesting. I'll allow you to take that away and think about it. Next week, as I said, I won't be here. And the week after that, I want to finish with something we've never looked at before, which is Rav Schwab, who has a lot of interesting things to say, and Rav Lichtenstein. And I also just want to leave you with a question as to whether even the world of Rav Lichtenstein, which is a late 20th century perspective on life, is really how people work today. We live in the 21st century. 5 days from now, it will be 2020. Okay? That's already not the beginning of the 21st century anymore. That's getting towards the middle of the 21st century. Do we really work the way that people did 25 years ago? I can tell you from teaching young people, the answer is no. People are very different today. And we'll talk at the end of next time as to whether we need a new vision for this whole topic to take us into 21st century and what that might be. Okay, let's leave it there.